Well, good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the KRFY Morning Show. This is Julie Calamine, one of three Tuesday morning show hosts, and it's really a pleasure for me to introduce our morning show topic for today, which is Birds of Prey Northwest with the executive director and raptor biologist, Janie Veldkamp. Hello, Janie.
Morning, Julie.
Oh, so nice to have you here. You do visit with us on KRFY from time to time, but let's still go ahead and start with having you tell us a bit about your background and also how you became interested in raptors and how, and finally, how Birds of Prey Northwest came into being. So let's get going and hear about your background.
Well, my first degree is in nursing, and I was then on my way to medical school, so I studied for another 6 years. And after 10 years in college, I took a summer off, and I volunteered for a peregrine falcon reintroduction project in Indianapolis, Indiana, in 1991. I didn't even know what a peregrine was at the time, but I needed a break from medicine and biology. So they had me holding one of these endangered, speedy, sexy raptors, the peregrine falcon. And I held it for the media, and it spun its head around and turned looked at me, and I had epiphany. I said, "My gosh, we can wipe you off the face of the planet, or we can restore you. That's a pretty powerful place to be." I changed my major. I have a master's degree in eagle biology from Purdue University. And just a few years later, I formed this nonprofit, Birds of Prey Northwest.
That's
And the rest is
amazing.
history.
Yeah, you're a smart lady and you made a commitment to a great cause. I love it. Well, that is so great. You're located, for those that don't know, you're in St. Mary's. So tell us something about the facility.
Yes, we're on about 13 acres, 8 miles north of St. Mary's. And we house all kinds of birds of prey, eagles, hawks, owls, falcons, and osprey. And they're all in designated aviaries to house them based on how sized they are and how flighted they are and how much space they need to move around. We're heavily permitted with federal and state agencies to do our work. And we are giving tours of our facility from May 15th to October 15th. You have to call ahead and make an appointment because sometimes we're not there because we travel with our educational ambassadors. But you can come on out and have a look at all the birds of prey on our property.
All right. Well, what is the phone number or website if folks want to make that visit? How do they reach you?
Sure, the website is Birds of Prey Northwest, all spelled out, .org. And the phone number is 208-245-1367. Call us and make an appointment and come out and visit.
There you go. And we'll repeat this a time or two more during this interview, but I wanted to get it out there right away. Well, that's a lot of aviaries. So, are there like dozens of aviaries? You've got so many species and lots of rescue happening and lots of permanent birds too, I think.
Yes, there are many aviaries, probably 35 or so. One of the largest is our Eagle Flight Run, where the rehabilitating, recovering eagles, both golden and bald, are placed for exercise to build up their cardiovascular strength before they're released. That facility is 120 feet long by 25 feet wide and 30 feet tall. So it's a quite large spaces to exercise the eagles.
That is amazing. And which brings me to the question, what is the percentage of your permanently housed raptors because they can't be put back into the environment and those that you're working with? I'm sure it varies from time to time, but how many do you have as a permanent population and then what's going on in the rescue population?
We have 33 permanent educational ambassadors, and these are birds of prey that cannot be returned to the wild. And they're placed on an educational permit, so they have another purpose in life, even though they cannot go back to the wild. And so we have about 150 patients each year, birds of prey that meet the modern world with a car collision or illegal gunshot or poisoning, and so on and so forth. I just took a call this morning from Wallace, Idaho, where people were hiking on a trail and found a grounded baby screech owl, Western screech owl. And what happens with these little orphaned owls is they get grounded and blown out of the nest before they can fly. And depending on their age, we encourage the citizen to get them gathered up. We x-ray the birds, and then we place them in with our birds of prey, parent birds. We have foster parent birds. We never hand feed a baby owl or baby hawk or a baby eagle because we want to avoid imprinting on them. Imprinting on humans is something to be avoided at all costs. And we do that, we're not by using a puppet, but with the living species. We have an educational Western screech owl that now is off programs and doing foster parenting.
I did not know that that could happen, that a non-related adult bird would take care of a baby.
Yes, the parenting cue is based on hormonal cues. So it's the time for them to be parents. So we put babies in with them, and the baby emits a special food baking call, and the mother owl will feed it, even though it's not her baby.
I had no idea that is such a special thing that you can do. I just am amazed. It's wonderful.
Yes, and it's important to note to your listeners that imprinting with birds of prey is irreversible. So it's to be avoided at all costs. So these birds can then be returned to the wild.
Okay. Well, you've told me some of the ways that raptors need, rescue, but I'd also like to know how do people get them to you? Do they just put them in a box? What do they do?
Yes, we often coach the citizen what to do next. Unless it's an eagle, we don't coach them through that. But we ask the citizen to gather up the birds and put them in a box. And we give them instructions on where to take the bird, whether they're closer to our vet clinic in Post Falls or closely to us in St. Mary's. And these citizens find us through the state police, sheriff, our website, birdsofpreynorthwest.org is the website. So keep that handy if you ever need it.
Boy, that's for sure. I haven't this spring. I haven't seen any raptors that looked like they needed help, but there sure are a bunch of baby birds running around right now. Baby crows, baby sparrows, everything, and some are on the ground. And so far, I've just left them all because they've got parents flying around. But it sounds like it's kind of the same, right, with raptors. Or like, if there's a parent bird, do you leave them, or
Exactly. If the parent is nearby, they're just learning to fly. They end up on the ground occasionally. The parent will feed them. But if they're very young and they still have downy feathers and don't have their flight feathers, it's not very likely that the parent bird will feed them for long term. And the longer you're on the ground, of course, you're subject to ground predators.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's a great little tutorial, Janie, on how to sort of decide whether a baby raptor is going to need help or not, and then what to do. So I appreciate that. I think listeners will appreciate that too. And maybe as a result, you'll get some additional visitors in your raptor center due to this interview. I hope that happens. But beyond that, rehabbing injured wild raptors, that's a big job for you all, and I imagine it's considered full time, but that's not all you do. You do a ton more education, et cetera. So I think we should jump into either the writing that's been done or the education program. You decide what you'd like to start with.
Well, we rehabilitate a number of birds of prey every year, but only about 50% of those injured wild birds get to be returned to the wild. So you can't really affect the population by returning a red-tailed hawk or two back to the population. But where we put our efforts is with education of youth. Third to fifth grade adults, we take the live birds into the classroom. And we talk about natural history, conservation, what these kids can do themselves to help birds of prey, and so on and so forth. And that's where we feel we're making the difference in changing the world a little bit, one student at a time.
I get it. I mean, if a child knows what the steps might be to keep more of those birds healthy and alive and not do damage, then of course the world is a better place. Let's talk about what that education looks like.
Yes, you probably are too young to remember DDT Advent and the Endangered Species Act, which covered the bald eagle went endangered, the ospreys were critically endangered, and of course, the most endangered of all was the peregrine falcon. And we remind students how that happened, how that pesticide crept into the food chain, how it thinned the eggshells and the population crashed of these apex predators. And what we learn from that is what we teach that th teaches these students this, that they are bioindicators. These birds of prey tell you how well you're taking care of the planet. And that's what we learned from DDT Advent and the Endangered Species Act. So we recovered those species I've just mentioned that were endangered. And we asked the students at the end of our lecture, whose job is it to care for them in the future, kids? And we prompt them to look at themselves, to be conservation themselves when they grow up.
Yes, and what does that mean? It means preserving habitat, I suppose. And what else do you talk about?
Well, don't throw trash along the side. Even if it's an apple core, it attracts mice. That owls are looking for the mice, and therein you have a hunting owl next to high-speed traffic. That's a bad situation. And you can also volunteer your time, such as a facility like of ours. We're an all-volunteer network, and this work needs to be done. We're heavily permitted with state and federal agencies, but we don't really receive any funding, so we have to have about 50,000 each year just to feed the birds in our care. The
Wow.
peregrines need quail, the osprey need fish, the golden eagles need rabbits, and so on and flora. And the owls, of course, all the mice they need all have to be purchased.
I see. And then on
So we're
top
a
of that,
501c3.
yeah. And so you need, of course, you need to buy the food, but then to pay for staff would be pretty extreme. So volunteers are key, I would guess.
Yes, and we volunteer all of our times as well. When we do these educational programs, we load up the birds, we travel to the venue, we do the program, load the birds back, drive back to the facility. It takes about 6 hours just to do a 1 hour program. So we do all that time, and the fees that we charge go into care for the birds.
Yeah, that's amazing that you're able to do that. So alive, how do those resident birds do with travel? You must have to be pretty careful.
Well, they're all trained to be crated up. They have four commands. They're trained to step up, step down, get into your crate, and put your wings out. So they're all trained birds, and they're very used to their crates. Each has an individual crate. Of course, our eagles that we travel with have a huge crate, but they're all trained to tolerate travel.
Yeah, good deal. You mentioned when you're talking about the history of, bringing back these incredible birds, the falcons, peregrine falcons, and the bald eagles. I am not too young to remember those times. I grew up in Minnesota, and of course, they have a resource of some, ospreys, some bald eagles. I don't think peregrine falcons were very prevalent when I was a kid, but it was such a concern. And how lucky we are that these are success stories at this point, anyway.
Yes, and it took some 50 years to get these populations back to healthy numbers. In fact, I spent 10 years of my career as an endangered species biologist reintroducing osprey and peregrine falcons in states where they wiped out from this pesticide
Right.
we talked about.
That's been a whole nother process working with federal agencies and people like you to get these raptors back into the areas that they really belong. It's just a wonderful story. It's a sad story that it happened, but a wonderful story that they've come back to so many areas. Really great. Well, I so appreciate that you're helping educate young people so that they're thinking about raptors in the right way. When I was a kid in Minnesota, there were farming kids that would still shoot at raptors, and I really hope that that has stopped. I don't know what your experience is down and around St. Mary's. Is that still a thing that happens?
Oh, absolutely. It leads one of the leading cause of death of both golden and bald eagles today in our country today. It's illegal shooting. So even if we're talking to third graders, we teach them, if you get your first gun and you become a hunter here in the great state of Idaho, do not shoot hawks or owls. It's against the law, and it doesn't make any sense because they are mouse control birds. They help you by
Sure.
eating a lot of mice.
That's right. Yeah, so that's a big message. Raptors are our friends and need to be protected for sure.
And that leads me into my book about the bald eagle named Beauty, who was illegally shot. And the poacher missed killing her, of course, but blew her top beak off. And I was on my first Alaskan vacation I
I just
discovered this bald eagle at a facility much like ours. And I asked them, what would happen to this bald eagle without a beak? And she said, the bird is scheduled to be euthanized. Her beak never grew back a year later. And I said, don't do that. I'm a former nurse. We put prosthetics on vets returning from war and children. Let me see what I can do. So I flew Beauty, the bald eagle, to Idaho, where I formed a beauty team of a mechanical engineer who knew code. 3D printing was just coming out on the public sector, a dentist for attachments, a veterinarian, and myself of biology. We created the beauty team. We were the first people in the world to put a 3D printed prosthetic beak on the bald eagle Beauty. And that's her book, Beauty and the Beak, her journey about how she got
Wow.
her beak and how she lived to be almost 30 with us.
That is amazing. She's no longer with you, but she lived to be 30 almost.
Yes, and it's like technology has caught up with her story. Now, many schools, elementary schools, have 3D printers. So the teacher can email me the request for the beak, and after the students read the STEM teaching book, Beauty and the Beak, they can print out the actual beak that she received.
That really, in my view, that combines sort of like what I would say would be STEM learning with compassion.
Yes, these both of my books, Soup and Sore about the baby osprey that needed a home, and Beauty and the Beak are both STEM teaching books. Each of the books have a teacher's guide that's free to download from our website that teaches STEM principles in the classroom.
Well, I just think that's wonderful. Is there an age range that that book is geared toward, or is it for everybody and anybody?
Well, it's interesting you asked that. We geared the book to third and fifth graders, but we found after several years of it being published, first graders love it and the adults love the book because the last 40 books of both of the books are facts about the species we talk about that even adults enjoy. So they're all ages. Just our live bird of prey programs are for just about all ages. If you can sit still for a half hour, you can learn about birds of prey.
Yeah, for adults and children, a half hour is about enough these days. Boy, attention spans. Well, that's a book that I'm planning on reading, and it just sounds like it's really a great story that anybody would appreciate. Well, all right, we've talked about Beauty and the Beak, and there's another one, though, Swoop and Soar. Tell us about that book.
Yes, this book is about two baby osprey that were 10 days of age when they were blown from their nest. And once the nest is destroyed and the babies are grounded, the parents can't care for the baby ospreys. So we were alerted, and we had been monitoring osprey nests. And in the same storm that destroyed this nest of the two baby osprey was the same storm that affected another nest. They lost their chicks to the same storm that did not survive. So, after careful observing and feeding the birds and caring for them to get them stable, we cross-fostered them into this other nest. And these new parents, fosters, after several hours, took over the care of these baby osprey. These are the work of a raptor biology. So, my books are a true story with a heroine and a happy ending. And they grew up in their nest and flew off. 6 weeks later, the baby osprey swoop and soar.
Wow, and a real success story for, Fish and Game if they were involved and you all as Raptor Rescue. And as you said, it's not the rescue isn't what saves the population of ospreys, but what a great feel good story about some parents and some babies that got together. Great.
Yes, and I would encourage your listenings. Audience, if you forget our name and our website, call Idaho Fish and Game. They'll give us your number, the number of our Birds of Prey facility, and we'll get you some help for the bird.
That's right, but why don't you go ahead and repeat it again for us so that folks can jot it down?
Yes, we're Birds of Prey Northwest, all spelled out, .org is the website. We also have a Facebook page, and of course, our phone number is 208-245 1367.
Okay.
Keep that number, you might need it.
That's for sure. That is absolutely for sure. You've mentioned that folks can make an appointment to have a tour by calling, which you've just given us a contact number. Are there any events that people might look forward to? Anything like that?
Well, you can always follow our Facebook. There's where we post our public lectures. We were just in Sanborn 2 weeks ago at the library. They're doing a free public lecture. We do a couple every year. Now that summer is approaching and school is closing, we're catching our breath because we've just completed about 50 programs in the last 2 months. So we're taking a little pause now.
Yes, well, and it might also be the rescue season coming on because there's lots of young raptors not quite staying in their nest or what have you, stuff like that.
Yes, they come to us in sequence. First come the owls, then come the baby hawks, then the baby merlins, then the baby eagles. They come in succession.
Yes, oh boy. And well, I'd like to know what do you have in the facility these days? What's in what who are you helping right now?
Ooh, well, we have a long-eared owl that's scheduled to be released next week, a rather rare bird for us to see. Only seen about three of them in the last 25 years.
Wow.
And we have a baby great horned owl that's just finishing up getting its feathers. We've just rescued the western screech owl. So it's baby owl season finishing up right now. So
And
that's who's here. And
then who
these baby owls eat twice as many mice as the adults. So a baby great horned owl can eat 15 mice a night. That's at $2 a piece, by the way.
Oh boy.
So they all need fed by the foster parent bird. And then when their feathers have come down, we make sure they can capture live prey like mice, and then they're returned back to where they were found.
Wow, and so that's a really quite a complicated process.
Yes, that's why you have to be permitted and have knowledge to care for these birds. A mention about Minnesota. I trained at the famous Gabbert Raptor Center in St. Paul, Minnesota, the first real raptor center in the country to manage eagles and hawks and owls medically, to treat them, to return them to wild.
I know exactly that facility because I attended University of Minnesota on that campus and I visited it. It's wonderful. So what fun
Yes,
for
it
you.
inspired me.
I bet I can imagine. Well, that is so great. Janie, what are we missing? Is there any other message you'd like to share with listeners that will help them think about raptors?
Well, we're a 501c3 nonprofit. We're 33 years old, and we're dependent on donations of people just like you, whether it's a dollar or a hundred. So there's a PayPal button on our website for donations. And so you can think about that, or you can mail a check to us if you like at P.O. Box 3507. That's in Coeur d'Alene, 83816, Birds of Prey Northwest. You can mail us a check or a donation.
Yeah, I'm glad that you mentioned that because it is so important, and I can't think of a better nonprofit to decide to become a donor to. And then I do want to ask you about volunteers. You're mainly working in St. Mary's. Is that where volunteers would be most needed?
Well, we have several positions for volunteers. One of the most popular positions is transporting the bird. For instance, we get a bird in Sandpoint. It needs to go to our vet clinic in Post Falls. So we call the volunteer in Sandpoint, have them transport the bird to the vet clinic for X-ray and initial treatment. The other
Sure.
treatments are done on our facility site in St. Mary's. We have to care for the birds daily. They need fed and they need waters changed a couple times a week. And so
Right.
these are all done by trained volunteers.
Yeah, so even if you're a Sandpoint resident and you want to help out, you could be on the list of volunteers who might be willing to transport an injured bird either to Post Falls or maybe down to you in St. Mary's.
Yes, I keep a volunteer list by geographic. So if I've got a bird in Sandpoint, I look, where are my volunteers in Sandpoint? I call them. If they're in Wallace, Idaho, Lewiston, we have volunteers throughout the panhandle here that can help, and even in the Spokane area as well.
I can't think of a more fun way to volunteer than to, help rescue an injured raptor and get it to the right place and hope that it has a successful recovery. That would be a feel-good volunteering opportunity.
Well, and you're making a difference in the world a little bit by helping a hawk or an eagle.
That's right. Oh, that sounds really fun. I may have to talk with you after the interview about that because guess what? What else is in St. Mary's? The St. Joe River, where some of us love to go fishing.
Sure. And camping and fly fishing, for sure.
There you
In
go.
fact, we overlook the St. Joe River.
Oh, you do? How nice. So another reason to get out and visit your facility. Very nice.
Sure.
All right. Well, I think I will ask you to just repeat one more time how folks can get in touch with you and the going online and making a donation via PayPal or on your donation tab is so easy and every little bit helps. So I would say to listeners, think about that if you're looking for your nonprofits to donate to this year. And go ahead,
And in
Jamie.
closing,
Yeah.
in our closing, our vision is to build a public raptor center. So we, if you have 20 acres or 50 acres that you can donate to our nonprofit, we're anxious to build a public facility where tourists off I-90 and residents come visit all the birds of prey that are educational ambassadors. Birdsofpreynorthwest.org is our website. Phone number 208-245-1367. Give us a call. Make our day.
Oh, absolutely. Janie, I'm so happy that you mentioned that that's a dream for you and may really motivate some folks who want to become donors to help you work toward that dream. Thank you for mentioning that. All right. Well, I'm going to conclude this wonderful interview with you, Janie Veldkamp of Birds of Prey Northwest. And it's just been a delight. And I hope listeners have a lot of ideas about how they can help out in this world of raptors. Thank you, Janie.
Keep your eyes toward the sky. Bye now.
So, all right. Thank you. Bye.